Welcome to Miller Kane, A True and Exact History, a serialized novel by Samuel Ligon, published for the first time in The Inlander and broadcast by Spokane Public Radio. Miller Kane is made possible by Sprint and The Inlander. Previously on Miller Kane, Miller had begun to look at houses, a permanent home for him and 8-year-old Carlene, in Missouri, not far from the site of America's latest mass shooting. He and Carlene felt called to this place, to counsel and cry with survivors like Tammy and Fiona. The town is still swarming, though, with people Miller previously met working the aftermath of other massacres, including Hefner, whose grief and anger have found a target in Miller. And now Lizzie, Carlene's mother, is in town too, sprung from jail after making a deal with her estranged husband, Connor. They're here to collect Carlene, and Miller's plans for a normal life may just fall apart. Most important, though, is making sure Carlene is safe. Now, here's author Samuel Ligon.
Chapter 8, Part 6. Carlene was wearing her yellow bonnet when Miller picked her up, she and Fiona shaking mason jars of milk on the patio out back. "They're making butter," Tammy said. The plan was to meet Lizzie at the coffee shop in Springfield, but it was still too early. "There's pumpkin bread in the oven," Tammy said, "if you have time." Encouraging words were all over the kitchen, framed in needlepoint, burned into wood, spelled out with refrigerator magnets. Hope, gratitude, dream, believe. Tammy stood at the counter measuring dry ingredients into a bowl. Miller imagined other words bent out of rusted metal. Quit, surrender, most things haven't worked out, the great Junior Kimbrough title. Maybe he wasn't the right person to raise Carlene. Maybe all he was good for was keeping her on the road until her mom arrived, worn out from jail. "Carlene said you might be settling here," Tammy said. Had he ever really thought that? The place was a disaster, a ruin. Carlene would want to stay, but that wasn't going to happen. "There's nothing left for us here," Tammy said. She pulled the bread from the oven and placed it on a cooling rack. "We're going to Wichita," she said. "Blake's got people there." "Smart," Miller said. "I don't know if it's smart," Tammy said. "Leaving isn't quitting," Miller said. "Maybe it is," Tammy said. "It's hard to know what's best for the girls." A giant wall clock ticked above Miller's head, surrounded by a wooden rooster and 3 wooden chickens. Everything in Tammy's kitchen might have come from the same catalog. "Carlene said you've done this before," Tammy said. "Shootings, I mean." "Yes," Miller said. "My nephew..." The girls burst into the kitchen. "Try this," Carlene said, opening the jar of butter and handing it to Miller. "Fantastic," he said. "The bread's too hot to cut," Tammy said, but she cut it anyway, and they smeared it with butter and jam. Then Carlene gathered her things from Fiona's room, everyone hugging at the door. When they finally got outside, it seemed likely they'd never see Tammy and Fiona again. Miller told Carlene about her mom as they drove, not knowing how to prepare her or if he should prepare her. What if Connor was lurking and they had to bolt before seeing Lizzie? It didn't seem possible that Carlene would be gone from him, that she'd fall into Lizzie's arms and fly home, out of his life. The better plan would be the 3 of them driving back to Washington in the motorhome, Carlene and Lizzie sharing his bed and Miller sleeping in Carlene's loft, almost like practicing for the future. Maybe Lizzie was right about the deal with Connor. But Miller would have to see him first, make a determination based on how desperate he seemed. "Your mom sounded good," he told Carlene, and Carlene said, "Is she coming home?" "Maybe," Miller said. "Probably." Carlene untied and retied her bonnet strings, pulling the brim lower over her eyes. "Are we going back to Mount Vernon?" "Maybe," Miller said. "Is that what you want?" "I don't know," Carlene said. "I thought we were supposed to be here." "Maybe we're done here," Miller said. "Or maybe Mom could come when she gets out. She could help too." "Sure," Miller said. He parked the car and they walked onto the square. No sign of Connor. "Where are we going?" Carlene said. And Miller said, "To the fountain." Taking her to Lizzie felt like losing her, but maybe it didn't have to be that way. I could go back to school, she said, and Miller said, exactly. A woman on the bench beside them scattered crumbs for the pigeons, the birds lifting and resettling as people walked by. The fountain burbled behind them. Miller put his arm around Carlene, and she leaned into him. The massacre was everywhere here, but would soon begin to fade, even though so many had died close by. Marquette would never recover. It would be best if the town were bulldozed and buried. Are we still looking at houses Friday? Carlene asked. If you want to, Miller said. I do want to, Carlene said. But that's in Columbia, Miller said, a few hours away. Carlene loosened her bonnet and let it fall down her back. Miller kept his eyes open for Connor, but wanted to be fully aware of Carlene, fully here for her, because any second... And then Carlene gasped. Mom! She cried. She looked at Miller, her face radiant. It's Mom! Across the square, Lizzie was approaching a table in front of the coffee shop. She put her hand to her forehead to block the sun, looking for the sound of Carlene's voice, her other hand holding a cup and saucer. Mom! Carlene cried. She jumped from the bench. Wait, Miller said. Carlene! Lizzie said. She put her cup on the table and opened a gate in the wrought iron fence, moving toward Carlene. Watch the street, Miller said, taking Carlene by the hand. Mom! Carlene cried, dragging Miller. Up on the curb, he let her go, and she ran to her mother, Lizzie opening her arms to take her in. Miller stayed back, checked the square. Still no Connor. Carlene said something into Lizzie's neck. I know, Lizzie said, holding her. I miss you so much. Miller, Lizzie said, rising from her crouch with Carlene. He approached and they embraced, Carlene still attached to Lizzie, Miller putting his hand on her head, Lizzie pulling him in hard, the three of them together right there on the sidewalk. I have to tell you about the butter, Carlene said. Yes, Lizzie said, leading Carlene through the gate toward her table. Tell me everything. Lizzie sat and Carlene crawled into her lap. Miller had texted her last night and this morning, had talked to her on the phone before picking up Carlene, and she assured him that Connor would not be here, that he had no idea where they were meeting. Miller believed her. She ran her hands over Carlene's back. I love your bonnet, she said. And Carlene said, Miller got it for me. A cowgirl hat and a Barbie clinic, too. Wow, Lizzie said. Mom, Carlene said, pushing herself closer to her mother. Carlene, Lizzie said. Mom, Carlene said. Yes, Lizzie said. It seemed wrong to be so close to them when they only needed each other. I'll get us a treat, Miller said. He kissed Carlene's head, Lizzie's too. Be right back, he said. As he turned to walk away, he saw Connor across the square, leaning against a wall by the fountain. Miller's heart kicked, but it wasn't fear this time. It would be good to start whatever was going to happen between them. He looked at Carlene and Lizzie holding each other, then walked through the tables, onto the sidewalk, across the street. Connor slouched by the fountain, his pure idiot self, skinny, scraggly, lighting a cigarette on a summer day in October. He needed to understand that Miller would be watching from now on, that Connor wasn't going to bully anyone ever again. The pigeons fluttered from in front of the pigeon lady as Miller walked by. Connor did not seem to be looking at anyone. Maybe he was a junkie. Blank, pathetic, oblivious. Miller was no more than 10 feet away when Connor looked up and saw him, jerking upright. You, he said. The last time they'd seen each other, Miller had brained him with a Madonna and was driving away, Connor running onto Lizzie's lawn, screaming, I see you. Now he flicked his cigarette and planted himself. Stay out of my business, he said. We're here for her own good. Sure you are, Miller thought, the smell of rotten meat and ammonia rising around him. You don't scare me, Connor said. Miller had nothing to hit him with but his hands, but he wasn't going to hit him, unless he had to. He was going to tell him how it was going to be from now on. The smell came on stronger. Connor's face changed, shifting from sneer to surprise to fear, as if Miller had frightened him just by looking at him, as if he finally understood. No, Connor said, holding his hands up and starting to turn. Miller should have done this months ago. Then Connor crumbled. It didn't make sense exactly. Miller's mind behind what he saw and heard. Connor crumbling at the same moment the gunshot cracked. Connor reaching for his leg as he fell, blood soaking the fabric of his jeans, as if Miller was seeing the shot Lizzie had taken him down with in her front yard all those months ago. "Why'd you shoot me?" Connor said, smoke and gunpowder mixing with rotten meat and ammonia. Miller turned and Hefner was there with a long revolver, the smell rising, pigeons flapping and people screaming. They looked at each other, the moment more intimate than any that had passed between them, as if they were agreeing to something, coming to terms. Someone shouted, maybe Connor. Then Hefner discharged a bullet into Miller's brain, blowing off a piece of his skull like a Kennedy doll's. The warmth of it and the cold. The speed, a sky so blue it was purple, clouds swimming around Rainier, and down below, the rolling green of the Palouse. "It's like an ocean of wheat," Carlene said. Relief ran through him. She was out there somewhere with Lizzie, across the square. They were all going to be okay. But he was falling, everything bright and crackling. It wouldn't be so hard to raise her, to give her the chances she deserved. They both loved her, and she had waffles and her dolls and her own big heart. She probably saved the whole damn world. There were more shots as the cops took Hefner down, Miller certain, as he died, that Carlene was right there with him.
You've been listening to Miller Kane, A True and Exact History, a novel by Samuel Ligon, published in weekly installments by The Inlander, with archived audio at SpokanePublicRadio.org/MillerKane. Our theme music is by Indian Goat. I'm your producer, Chris Messini. Join us next week for the final episode of Miller Kane. And if you want to get caught up with Miller Kane, you can now find it as a podcast on Google Play, Apple Podcasts, or the NPR One app. Just search for Miller Kane and hit subscribe.